Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, interesting day in Congress today. And this is one of those moments where you go, you know, with inflation raging, with, baby formula not being on the shelves the way it should be, with the problems that we've got, I don't know that the House subcommittee should be having a hearing on UFOs. I think it sends the wrong message. It is what it is. Maybe some subcommittee hearings on taxing the rich. I think that's a good place to start. We should go there. We should have that hearing every day until we actually do something, especially when you look at Bezos's tweets yesterday. I think that's a good start. Just my thoughts. And here to share some thoughts on maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can check that out. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be in your show, Rick. Thank you.
So what do you think? Yeah, the UFO subcommittee hearings? I don't know. I'm a little weirded out by that.
Yeah, I didn't go to the UFO hearing, but we are promoting yet another bill to tax the rich. They're putting into legislative language several variations of Biden's proposal that people who are wealthy beyond some certain amount should be paying taxes every single year, not just when they eventually die or sell their assets or something. Same way you pay your taxes every single year, Rick. Rich people should too.
And it's one of those things that I think seems fair, especially yesterday after we talked about the fact that CEO pay has gone up yet again. And yet, how many years has it been since we've raised the minimum wage? 12, 13? I've almost lost count of how long it's been since the minimum wage last increased.
Yeah, take inflation into account, the minimum wage hit its peak in the mid-1960s, Rick, and hasn't gone up since then. We've been protesting in front of restaurant shareholder meetings just this week, suggesting they just should talk about raising the minimum wage. And here in New York, they can pay people just the greater of their tips or the minimum wage, not tips plus the minimum wage, as we think it should be.
Yeah, I mean that's one of those things that, you know, I think most people think it is how it is how it works. And because it's how it should be. It should be you make a wage and then those tips are above and beyond. But it's not how that works. That $2.13 an hour, that whopping wage, that whopping minimum wage on the federal level of $2.13, or where I live here in Pennsylvania, $2.96 an hour. I don't know how you live on that.
Yeah, when you walk into IHOP or Denny's or any of those restaurants and you leave a tip, unless the person's doing very well, that just goes to decrease how much money the restaurant owner has to pay them, not to increase their take-home pay at all, which is very sad, and we want to change it.
Yeah, but again, it's this idea of reward for work and respect for work, and you guys have done a piece here that, you know, common sense to me, if you want to keep your workers around, pay them. That seems like common sense. It seems like something that employers should intrinsically know. And in fact, you know, there was a hearing not too long ago with Teamsters President Sean O'Brien, Amazon Labor Union President Christian Smalls, and our friend Greg LeRoy from Good Jobs First, where Mike Braun, the senator from Indiana, literally shocked me when he talked about just this very thing, where he said, you know, when he hired people that he paid the best wages, he had the best benefits because he wanted people to stay. He wanted people to be part of the family, so to speak. And if, you know, we all lived in his world, there'd be no need for unions or for laws or any of that. People would be treated decently. Sadly, we don't live in that world.
I wish I did live in that world, because I don't want to live in a world with people who can't pay their bills and people who don't have enough money to live on. Because that's not going to help me. That's not going to help me invest in businesses and make money.
Now again, I go back to yesterday's story. You know, I think right now that was the average pay of the CEOs went up to like $14.7 million at the top end. Some outrageous number. And look, I know people are going to say, but Rick, you know, you can't begrudge them of the wealth that they create. And look, you know, if everyone else were making a living wage, I'd go, okay. But this idea that someone's worth, you know, 400 times what the average worker is making, 1,000 times more than the average worker, I just don't think that there's, I think there's a fairness problem here. And this is where, especially when you start talking about, you know, them not paying the same tax rate as their secretary is, there's kind of a problem here, isn't there?
There is. It's just not fair. I mean, the bill we're proposing in Congress now is that anyone who is wealthier than 1,000 times the median wealth in our country, that would get you up to about $120-something million. If you have more than $120-something million in wealth, you should be paying taxes every year on how much money you make, not just wait until you sell your stock or whatever.
And how would that look? Because I've had people say, well, you know, but they don't make any money. Like Jeff Bezos doesn't really make any money. He doesn't have a salary. We don't, you know, he just has all this wealth sitting in stock and stuff, you know, because I don't think the average person understands, you know, how folks like you, how you make your money.
Well, what we're going to say, and Jeff Bezos makes billions of dollars every year with his stock going up, with his ownership of Amazon becoming more and more valuable. So we're proposing a law that after $125 million, that as he gets richer, he should be paying 2 or 4% of that increase in his wealth to the Treasury. And that would make things a little bit more fair. He'd still be really rich, don't get me wrong, but it would make things a little bit more fair and make things a little bit less unequal between the really rich and guys who work for a living.
Are there any places that already do this? I mean, there are any examples of where this happens?
They did try this in France. It didn't work very well because they had middle-class homeowners paying taxes on their homes going up in value. But we're proposing only for the top 10th of 1%. People who make people who have wealth 1,000 times more than the median wealth in our country. That's a tiny number of people, and we believe that those small number of really rich people should be paying more.
So what do you say to the person who goes, but, you know, we shouldn't be just targeting just a handful of people. You know, that would be unconstitutional.
Well, I don't think it would be unconstitutional. Income taxes started with just the very wealthy. Very few people paid income taxes in the 1920s and 30s. It was only expanded to include pretty much everybody during World War II. So I don't think it'd be unconstitutional. And I think everybody's going to pay some taxes, but we think that those people who are really rich should pay more taxes than those people like you who work for Living Rec. Yeah. That's what I tell people.
Now, what about the corporate end of things? I mean, we look at, you know, the corporate tax, they lowered down to 21%. They didn't close many loopholes. I look at someone like, you know, like Amazon, for instance, since we're talking about Bezos. You know, they've walked away from, you know, and pocketed a good bit of change over the years. In fact, some years, you know, made billions of dollars and paid zero taxes. Do we continue to allow that, or is there a way to claw that back? I mean, you go back to the golden age of when America was great. Some of my friends say, you know, that Norman Rockwell era of the 50s, yeah. The corporate tax rate was somewhere in the 50% range.
There are things we can do, and we think we should do them. We've been endorsing laws to change some of those things for a while now with our Patriotic Millionaires group. And we think that something can be done. Read Warren Buffett's letters from right after the 2017 Tax Cuts Act was passed. He'll tell you the reason that Berkshire Hathaway has done so well and gone up in value so much over the last 5 years is because they're paying less taxes. That's a large reason why I am wealthier now than I was then, is because I own stock in companies and that stock is more valuable because the tax rates the companies pay has gone down. And that's why I'm getting richer.
But here's the thing, Morris, this is what we've been sold. And now, you know, again, I don't buy it, but the line we've been sold is that having wealthier companies and letting companies have more resource, they're smart, they know what to do with money, they're going to invest it better, they're going to create more jobs. And in the long run, it's going to benefit, you know, people like me who have to work for those companies. That's what we've been sold. Is that the reality?
Well, the first part is true. They are smart. And if you give them more money, they will invest it well, and they'll make yet more money. And they'll be richer. That doesn't mean you'll be richer. If you own stock in companies, yeah, that'll be good for you if you're on the owner's side of it. If you're on the worker's side of it, at best, that won't make any difference to you at all. Don't forget, companies pay taxes on profits. Profits are calculated after salaries are deducted. And so it doesn't even make any sense, because if they pay more salaries, they'll pay less taxes automatically. That's the way the tax system works. They don't pay more salaries because they pay less taxes. It works the other way around. You first deduct the salaries and wages, then they calculate how much taxes they have to pay. So if they wanted to pay more money, they'd automatically pay less taxes. It's just total nonsense with the stuff these people are trying to tell you, Rick.
Yeah, no, because I've made the argument that by giving these companies all of this tax breaks and all this money, they've actually lowered wages because they want to squeeze more out of it. And it's actually hurt the working class a lot more than it ever could have helped, because now they're telling us. I look at UPS, took $2 billion and bought back their stocks. For me, as a working class person, that's kind of like admitting we had nothing better to do with this money at all. We couldn't buy new trucks. We couldn't buy new facilities. We couldn't invest this money in any more productive way possible other than making our stock price more worth more and enriching ourselves. There was nothing more we could do with this money than what we've decided, and that's just to enrich our shareholders and ourselves.
Yeah, when they say buy back stock, they mean sending money to the owners, and that's what they're doing. When they pay less taxes, there's more money left for the owners. That seems fairly simple to me. And if government policies that people that own companies should make more money, well, yeah, lower their taxes then. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a objective for government policies. I think government policies should be that people who work for a living should make more money. That's what I suggest.
So here's the thing. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you're talking about we're in the middle of a class war. Anytime I talk about class war, I get a pushback because there is a war between capital and labor. Capital is winning. The pendulum has swung way on the side of Wall Street and in the investor class and away from people who work, which is why we haven't seen a minimum wage increase in more than a decade, which is why we've seen unions being crushed over the last 30, 40 years, which is why we see a lot of the things that have gone on over these years. Curious your thoughts to that.
Well, I wish we were in the middle of a class war. I think we're kind of towards the end of a class war. And the investor class is mostly already won. And yeah, I mean, hopefully President Biden, if he has a few different senators next year, can go on a different path and maybe take back a little bit. But yeah, I think we should have a class war, because I think that the people that work for a living are falling way behind and they need to catch up. They need to vote themselves raises. There's going to be referendum on the ballot in several states like Michigan this coming year that people can go and vote to raise the minimum wage. And hopefully they will. And hopefully our government will see that people want to make more money, and hopefully they'll change. I don't know. They haven't yet.
Yeah, hopefully we'll wake up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Morris Pearl, the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. Patrioticmillionaires.org is their website. We'll get links out on social media. Also, make sure you check out their book, the aptly titled Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Makes the Rich Even Richer, at patrioticmillionaires.org. You can get a copy of that book, highly suggest it, and maybe give it to some of your friends. It makes a nice gift. So back to this piece of legislation you're moving. You know, how do we make sure that, you know, people get on board with this and pushing our representatives to get on board? Because I'm a firm believer in, look, you know, it's got to be pressure from us. It's got to be pressure from the working class that makes these representatives go, hey, my job could be on the line if I don't get behind this. What do we do?
Well, most of the Democrats are on the side of taxing the rich. Almost all the Republicans are not. I think at least you should do is ask your representative at a town hall or something, are you in favor of raising taxes on the very rich? And tell them what you think. And if enough people ask them, then maybe they'll get the idea. That's what we're hoping.
Maybe they'll get the idea. Well, I hope so. But Morris, as always, I appreciate the time. I hope folks will check out the book, Tax the Rich. Love the title. How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. You can get that at patrioticmillionaires.org. Morris Pearl, I appreciate the time, man.
Thank you, Rick. Great to be in your show.
As always, great stuff. Seriously, check out the book, Tax the Rich. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I love the title of the book, Tax the Rich. Tax the Rich, absolutely, without question. We should be taxing them. And not just 1% or 2% either. I mean, we need to go back to the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, and get into that 92% range. Start using that money a little bit more productively. Let's quick get a call. Got Alice on line one. Alice, what's on your mind?
I'll tell you exactly what's on my mind. I went and voted today.
Amen.
And apparently the Democratic Party here in my little county, it does not get out any info, because there were several write-ins, like the representative.
Mark Kritz?
For the federal, and apparently when they redid the district, and several other things. And so I asked the girls, I said, hey, do we have one of the copies of the ballot? Because there's several things on here that it's right in, and I'm trying to see if, you know, anyone is running or anything. And she brought me the, you know, sample ballot. Nothing. And I'm like, well, no wonder we're losing, because the party is falling down on the job. They're not getting out any information at all. So I wrote in Connor Lamb for better him than Rosenthal, because I voted for Fetterman for senator.
Right.
But this is the problem. They're falling down on the job.
Well, I mean, that's a local party thing. Here's the solution. Take it over.
Oh,
Alice for chair. I'm right there. Alice for chair. Al is for chair. Al is for chair. This is how we take over the party. We get people like you in charge and we run it. We run it the right way. We get active, engaged, educated people to take over the party. And look, on the Republican side as well, want sane, rational people taking over the Republican Party. Take them somewhere back to the sane line. Let's take both parties in a direction that helps working people do the right thing. What do you say?
Yeah, I know. I need to get involved. My dad used to be involved in the local Democrat Party. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Alice. I appreciate it. No, I mean, at the end of it, this is a problem. And we need active, engaged people taking over this stuff. And, yeah, there's a bunch of write-ins. I know in the 13th Congressional District in Pennsylvania where I'm at, I know Mark Kritz, a former congressman, was a name that they were circulating to put in as a write-in. Because they didn't get, the chaos of running elections. But here's the thing. This is the problem, and this is where taxing the rich is so important. And I go back to the Supreme Court on Monday, another Supreme Court decision. Why the court is so important, 6-3, all the crazy, corporatists on one side, the three Democratic appointees on the other. Now, you got to love this. Now, if you're a rich candidate, like here in Pennsylvania, we got three rich guys running for Senate. Dr. Quack lent himself a whole bunch of money, somewhere around $15 million. McCormick loaned himself $11 million. And this Sands woman, I guess, lent herself $3.9 million for her campaign. In the past, you weren't allowed to get more than $250,000 of that loan, get paid back on the other side. Now, thanks to this decision, after it's over, after you're on the other side, once you win, once you get on the other side, you can now go back to these wealthy donors and have them pay you every penny of it back. Think about that. Now, understand, there are caps in place for the general election. And I think it's still, $2,900 bucks? So a rich guy can only give you $2,900 bucks, per pre-election for the primary and for the general. That's it. But if you loan yourself millions of dollars, after the election is over, you can go back to that rich guy and go, oh, hey, by the way, I got all these loans I got to pay back. After the fact, they can give you all that money now, thanks to our Supreme Court. Let that sink in for a minute. If you thought running for office was like polo for the rich before, oh my goodness. This is going to be the stomping ground of the very wealthy, because average everyday working people, they're never going to be able to loan themselves millions of dollars to run a campaign. It's not going to happen. Arizona, you've got the Republican businessman Jim Lammon running for Senate, loaned himself $13 million. If he wins, he's going to get on the other side. He's going to get it all back, because the investor class, they never lose. And you know whose money that is? It's ours, because we've given it all of that to the wealth in massive tax breaks. And I love John Roberts, the Chief Justice's thoughts in the majority opinion, where he said the government is unable to identify a single case of quid pro quo corruption in the context of this kind of payback. Really? Oh, and of course, the decision is retroactive, so it's going to apply to this election cycle. Again, the rich getting richer, and the poor, well, not so much. And speaking of the rich doing things, we now find out that Facebook funded an effort to fight the antitrust regulations that were going after them. Record again. Facebook funded American Eagle, which was out there, one of those good conservative think tanks. They were out there, appearing to be a grassroots group, anti-regulation group, antitrust regulation group. A Facebook front. Because, these big companies, they fear us going, maybe we should be breaking up these giant conglomerates. Maybe we shouldn't have these massive enterprises having so much power. Maybe it's a bad thing to have monopoly. Maybe we'll wake up. I'm not sure when, but again, this Supreme Court decision, again, it's all about the money. Just made the rich a little bit richer. And our politics, a lot more expensive. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Share your thoughts. If you got any questions, comments, I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Make sure you check out the podcast. Share that with your friends and neighbors. Also, make a comment or two. Back after this. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, at the beginning of May, more than 150 D.C. circulator bus operators, members of ATU Local 689, they hit the picket line demanding better wages, hours, conditions, basically respect. Because remember, we're coming out of that little pandemic thing. You may remember it. That period where we were calling all these people who had to work through the pandemic, you know, essential. We were calling them frontline heroes. And these folks, more than anyone, they were on the front lines. They were the ones who made sure all of the other heroes, all of the other essential folks, like the nurses and the people who work at the clinics and at the grocery stores and all those, they were the ones who made sure those folks could get to their jobs. And now is that moment where they're going, hey, you know what? We demand better wages, hours, and conditions, and good on them. They just ratified their contract, ending the strike, obviously, and now beginning to move forward. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what it took to get to this point, I've asked Sherry Semmelsberger to come talk with us. Sherry is the Secretary-Treasurer of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. TTD.org is their website if you want to check out the work that they do there. Sherry, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a pretty big victory, I think. I see this and I go, you know, all during the pandemic, we were hearing these horror stories of, you know, these bus drivers and these transit workers who were being infected. And, you know, there was almost no one there to help them, especially in the heart of it at the beginning, except their unions. And it's good to see that, you know, they're standing up and saying, you know what, you called us heroes. It's time to start treating us that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, It's been long overdue to have those voices heard. It was good, and I was very proud and honored to be able to actually stand out there with them on their picket line.
But you know, the shame of it is it shouldn't have to get to this. It shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to risk your job. You shouldn't have to go on strike. This should have been something that this company, these people just said, you know what? We respect. We honor you. We respect the sacrifices that you made. Because look, they got good raises. They got good benefits. And I was looking through some of it, stuff that, you know, isn't. Out of bounds. It should have been something that should not have gotten to this point.
Right.
At least that's my view.
Absolutely. Should have just been basic. And unfortunately, that is what we're seeing all across America now. And these workers are coming together and they are letting their voices be heard. And I'm very proud of that.
Now, as someone who's spent as much time in the labor movement as you have, and we'll talk about how you get into this in a little bit. But, you know, we're starting to see finally that sense of power of workers saying, you know what, we did come out of this pandemic. We are what you said we are. We are frontline heroes. We are essential. And it's time that you guys start treating us as such. So I tend to believe and I expect that we're going to see a lot more of this, of people saying, no, we're not going to take the paltry raises. We're certainly not going to take concessionary contracts. None of that's going to happen anytime soon. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, I think that these companies need a reality check. You know, they want to keep gaining these profits and deteriorating at the expense of the workers. And it's not right. And they are tired of it. They're frustrated and they're coming out and they're putting the pressure on. And I'm proud to see that.
You know, in cities across this country, you know, and I remember during the heart of the pandemic, just some of the horror stories that these transit workers had to deal with. And this is where, again, you know, as society, we've got to wake up to the reality that, you know, these are our friends, our neighbors, our family members, that, you know, they're us. We should be treating, you know, them and all of us with dignity and respect. Because I don't know if you've noticed it, but, you know, as we've opened back up, as we've gone back to quote unquote normal, we're not normal anymore. I mean, I think people's fuses are a little bit shorter. I think we need to learn to deal with each other a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think you're starting to see that, and arms are locking and solidarity is being heard, and it's coming back strong.
Yeah. And the good thing about this, and this is that moment where, you know, out of this, the idea of unionizing, the idea of solidarity, I've said this for the last couple of, you know, of crisis that we had, 2008 when that happened, and in 2009, I said, you know, is this the moment, that spark that's going to draw working people back together? And it really wasn't. We hadn't done the grassroots organizing yet. I see this as that kind of moment where I think the conditions are right for people to start saying, no, you know what? Maybe we do need to start uniting around the idea that we all deserve a living wage. We all deserve health security, retirement security, dignity, respect, the kind of things that, you know, people like you and I have been fighting for decades.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what I love most of all is how it's coming across in various industries. And you don't have to be, you know, that worker in that industry to show your support. You're seeing it with the miners, you know, the flight attendant, President Sarah Nelson, she went down and stood with the miners have been on strike. And that really, you know, speaks volumes. You are coming together, not because you know each other personally, but because you have a common ground. And you understand it, and you're fighting together.
Yeah, Sarah's amazing, and we've had her on the program a number of times, and she's a good friend. I love her passion. I love her intellect. I love her ability to message, because, you know, that's the way forward for the working class of this country, of standing together. That old Knights of Labor idea of a concern of one being a concern of all. An injury to one, an injury to all. And I think we're seeing that across industries. Now, your industry, you know, obviously the Transportation Trades Department there of the AFL, looking at transportation, public transit being part of it, you know, the rail service being another part. You look at, you know, a lot of our supply chain issues. You look at a lot of the things that are going on, especially with inflation. And it comes back down to transportation. It comes back down to the regulatory destruction that's happened over the last 40 years, and the destruction of what used to be, you know, the basis of what was known as the middle class in this country, which were good, solid, unionized jobs in trucking and in transit and on the railroads and in public transit. It's about now rebuilding that sector and rebuilding those jobs. So when I see a victory like this, it gives me hope that the future is going to be bright for future workers and the economy as a whole.
Absolutely. And I think that message is out there now. And you are seeing it. I feel like every day in the news, there's a mention of workers wanting to organize, and they're fighting strong for it. And they're getting out there, and they're putting the pressure on these companies. And it's great to see. It really is.
Yeah. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Sherry Stummelsberger. She's the Secretary Treasurer of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Make sure you check out their website, ttd.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. You know, Sherry, you and I share something of a common background. We both went and graduated from the National Labor College. You know, for me, I went because I love the labor movement. I want to help grow and help, you know, people lead the kind of lifestyle that I've been able to lead throughout my lifetime. And I say it all the time around the program. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. You know, we were where they put the socioeconomic ladder on top of. And I now live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers. And I credit that with, one, my hard work, obviously, but two, the fact that I've always had a union contract that made sure that that work was compensated at the highest possible wage I could get, with good health security and good retirement security, that when I get older, I'm not going to have to worry as much as sadly most workers in this country. And I want that for everyone. So we share that common bond that, you know, the National Labor College is one of the places that we got a little bit of information. I think that's it's an interesting little bit between us.
Yeah, it is. I was actually able to go back to college while working for Transportation Trades, which was great. I got my bachelor's degree while working full time.
Yeah, I did too. It's one of those things where we were able to do some of it, and it was a good mix program that I really liked. But the important part for me was the relationships that I came across, and the idea of being around people who want to build the same kind of movement forward and give people the same kind of opportunity. And the reason I really like, you know, talking with other labor people is I think they have the same kind of mentality that I have. It's about getting things done that make people's lives better. It's, you know, I don't meet many selfish people in the labor movement. It's all about how we can make, you know, not just, hey, I made it to where I've made it, kick the ladder off the side of the building and slam the door behind me. It's how do we replicate that and get people the ability to, you know, to lead the kind of lives that we've led. And I think that's important as well.
Yeah, it absolutely is. That's why, you know, when I showed up to that strike with Local 689 ATU, my great grandfather, when he came from Italy, that was his very first job, was with Local 689, working on the streetcar tracks here in DC. He was able to raise a family of, I said six. It actually was seven when I went back. My mom is actually one of six, but so to raise the family of seven on a union job, wages and benefits. And, you know, that I was able to pay that respect back full circle. That was the beginning foundation of a lot of history with my family throughout this throughout the labor movement. And I was very, very honored to be able to show up. We took food and drinks there for the workers. Greg Regan, our president, our chief of staff, Matt Colvin, joined as well. And we were able to sit and talk to them and show our support. And we were very proud to do that.
Yeah. You know, it's about sharing that story, though, because that's an important one. You go back and you know, we have this idealized version of what, you know, the 50s and 60s were, you know, the Norman Rockwell era. You hear the Trump supporters talk about, you know, make America great. And they usually point back to that period. But that period was, you know, the height of the power and prosperity of the working class, the most prosperous working class, not just in the history of this country, but I would argue in the history of human civilization, that, you know, someone who was doing, you know, working as a truck driver or, you know, a transit worker or working on the railroads or in the coal mines or in the steel mills or whatever industry they were in, you could support a family on one income, 40 hours a week. You could do all of the things that the American dream, we were told, well, you buy the house with the white picket fence, the 2.3 kids with the dog and the new car and vacations every year, send your kids to college, retire with dignity and respect. That is now just a dream because you can't do that much anymore. And This is where having these conversations and reminding people it is possible. Because we've done it in the past. And how did we do it? We did it with strong unions and strong union members.
All right. And having that voice and standing together. You know, I mean, you don't cross a picket line, you get out and you walk it with them. And that's happening. It's coming back and that's what we're seeing, you know, and like I said, it's exciting. It really is. Because I do think it got lost there for a while.
And this, you know, is one, this, you know, I was looking through some of some of your background and you have, you know, an extensive family history of people working in unions. And that's how things used to be. Everybody knew somebody who was a union in a union. And I remember growing up in the projects, you know, when you saw someone get that union job at Ford or Chevy in Cleveland, immediately their lives got better. So even as a, you know, small kid, you know, 7, 8 years old, I saw firsthand union job, better life. That's how it worked, because you saw immediately their lives got better. They had food at the end of the month, which in my neighborhood was not a certainty. You know, their kids got secondhand bikes. They got better clothing. Eventually, they got a secondhand car, and eventually they moved out, up and out altogether because of the wages that were earned. And
exactly.
That's an important message to be sending along. For me, union job, better life is the message.
It is. It absolutely is. And that's why I think that this is happening, because they're seeing these profit margins get wider for these companies, and workers are saying, I'm not going to sit out here. You're not going to overwork me, increase my hours and decrease my pay and benefits. This isn't going to happen anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the message going forward. So, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, when you're out talking to people, you know, what's the message for young people who may not understand what unions are, what they do? Because look, sadly, you know, I can guarantee you, the kid that's growing up in the house that I grew up as a kid doesn't have a neighbor who has access to get a union job. They're not seeing the things that I saw, sadly. You know, what's that response to that kid, to those people who didn't get to see it firsthand, that you want to engage, that you say, look, you know, this is the path forward. What is that message?
Yeah, the path forward is union, you know, and it's to unionize and to collectively come together and to demand that there are good jobs with good wages and good benefits. And together, you can do it. Stick together, and you can do it.
Yeah, I go back to the old argument.
Union is where it is.
I go back to the old argument of my grandfather's generation. You know, we can make every job a good job. You know, even those crappy jobs in the steel mills that were nasty and dirty and dangerous. They turned those from poverty wage jobs into solidly middle class jobs. My grandfather was a truck driver for his whole life. Started off shoveling coal off the back of a coal truck for 17 cents an hour. And when he retired with the dignity of a defined benefit pension, and, you know, was able to live, you know, the rest of his life in a home that he purchased, that he could have never imagined his life would go the way it went, all because of that union card and the empowerment that came out of it. And I think this generation, it's about empowering workers to say, you know what, we should have a voice, not just in the workplace, but all of society as well. Empowered, engaged, educated, nothing more dangerous than right. Empowered, engaged, and educated workers.
Right. Exactly.
It is that simple. But Sherry, I appreciate the time you've given us and the work that you guys do over at the Transportation Trades Department. Keep it up. I hope you'll come back and share some more with us down the road.
Sure will. Thank you for having me.
Outstanding stuff. Thank you so much. Sherry Samuelsberger, she is the Secretary Treasurer there at the Transportation Trades Department, AFL-CIO. Make sure you check out their website, ttd.org is that site. We'll get links out on social media so you can check it out. If you missed any program, make sure you grab the podcast. Always there, always available. Wherever you get your favorites, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between, it's always there, always available. Make sure you grab it. Subscribe, share, and give us a comment. 5-star rating would be nice as well. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. So to pick up on what Sherry was talking about, you know, you look at this and, you know, for me, the messaging in this moment, the messaging is empowering people to stand up and say enough already. You know, coming out of the pandemic, you know, I'm hoping that people realize that nothing's given, that you have to demand better wages, hours, conditions. You have to demand, respect and dignity. You know, I think back and I talk about my grandparents' generation a lot because they built something and they built it together. You know, they didn't always agree. No, not even close. But the one thing that they did demand is solidarity in the workplace. They understood viscerally who the enemy was. And that was the wealth class. That was the Wall Street class. We've been trained over these years to go, no, we want to be them. You know, we idolize wealth. You know, it's in everything that we see on TV, all the glitz and glamour. And, you know, I had someone mention this to me the other day, and it makes It makes sense. When I was a kid, if you showed something off, if you bragged about anything, you got mocked and you got beat up. Bad things happened. You didn't have the glitz and the bragging. You didn't have the bragging. You didn't have the trash talking. You know, I was watching one of these, the videos like on Instagram. And this guy was, hey, there's a fifth grader and he's, the best fifth grade basketball player in the entire world. And look at him do these amazing things for a fifth grader. And look at him talk trash. When I was a fifth grader, if someone would have done any of the things that kid did, all other 9 kids on the court would have beat him senseless. No, you can't say that, Rick. No, that's how the society was. And they weren't bullying him. You didn't get away with being that kind of a person. And we're idolizing people who are jerks. And I don't think that's good for society. We're idolizing the person who's taking everything away. I think back to my grandparents' generation. They shared a lot more. They were a lot more sharing. They were a lot more communal. We've been trained Reagan forward, my generation especially, and then every generation since, that it's all about you. It's greed is good. The one who dies with the most toys wins. That kind of hyper-individual mentality. That's not good for society. That cutthroat competition, not good. Competition is good. I'm one of the most competitive people you will meet, but I'm not going to lie, cheat, and steal to get ahead. And not because I'm special, but because I grew up in an era where everybody followed the rules and everybody held you to them. So as a matter of society, there were guardrails that you didn't go over. Today, we're saying, no, guardrails don't matter. And this is where I think there's got to be, if we're going to move somewhere forward, I think there's got to be some discussion of what common values are. And then start looking at ostracizing those who don't play by common values. The fact that there are people who are idolizing someone like Musk or Bezos, wow. Especially with the kind of wealth that they have and the kind of problems they could solve. The kind of legacy that they could leave behind. It's quite remarkable to me that we as a society don't demand more. And this is where, for me, a tax code. If you're not going to do it voluntarily, we're going to do it because we need it. Because it's what should be done. I can't believe he said that. He's talking about redistribution of wealth. Yes, he is. He's been talking about that for a very long time. Because it is that simple. We do need to invest in healthcare and education that doesn't saddle a generation with massive debt like we've done. We've saddled a generation with healthcare debt. There's so much that needs to be done. And what have we done? We've created a glutton class where it's greed is good, more for them. And the heck with the rest of us. It's time for us to hold everyone else in check. Just my thought. Love to hear yours, though. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast there at therickSmithShow.com or wherever you get your podcasts, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. Thanks so much for being here. See you next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.